That's right.
Not the Backstreet Boys, but the Big Ten. They are back. This is week 127 of Bratta's Branded Thoughts. And Alex, we had a discussion during our two-minute drill last weekend about where we were with college football and the Big Ten. And here we are. Big Ten football's back October 23rd/24th. We don't know who will be playing on what Friday evenings, which, of course, the Big Ten is trying to play more on Fridays. But, Alex, your initial reaction to the news that came down, it didn't come down when we thought it would. We thought we'd hear something Sunday. We thought we'd hear something Monday. Then we thought for sure we're going to hear something Tuesday after the Nebraska president said basically on a hot mic that the Big Ten was announcing that evening. But your thoughts on the news as an Iowa fan, as a fan of college football?
Well, I wasn't terribly surprised just because I couldn't imagine what it would have been like if they had voted not to play again. You know, that seemed like the more impossible scenario to me than voting to play after everything that happened in those weeks in between the two votes. So I wasn't overly surprised, but in a totally selfish way, of course, I'm totally happy that there's football back. I mean, there's, especially after the NBA ends here, there wasn't going to be as much to watch, but now we'll have Big Ten football. And I honestly don't watch other conferences. I probably would have, but I don't watch other college football conferences very much, except for maybe postseason stuff. So having the Big Ten back is really good news.
We're going to actually have time to talk football. Isn't that going to be nice? And we're going to break it all down for everybody here on in the coming podcast over the next 4 or 5 weeks. We don't have the Krukos with us this week. They've got some things they've got to handle away from the mic, and we respect that, and they'll hopefully join us again soon. We're going to talk NBA. We'll talk NFL. But let's talk a little bit more about where we are with the Big Ten. So the announcement was made Wednesday early in the morning that the Big Ten would be returning the weekend of the 24th. Were you surprised? I mean, obviously the initial rumors were that they were coming back the 10th. A week went by, then we started hearing the 17th. I think they still could have done the 17th, but they waited another 3-4 days after we expected an announcement and ends up being the 24th. It gives teams more time to prepare, but Alex, there's not much room for error. They've got an 8-game schedule. 8+1 was what they're calling it. Barry Alvarez explained the schedule on the Big Ten Network Wednesday morning. I mean, there's no room for error. There's no bye weeks. If a team has to postpone, that's it. At least, I think the only way that changes, and I think this is possible, if the college football playoff gets bumped back for some reason. I just wish that would happen anyways. I know the Big 12 is probably going to fuss about that. I'm sure the ACC wouldn't like that. Probably even the SEC wouldn't approve of that. But if teams start getting more games postponed, which I think is going to happen less and less as the season goes on, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit as to why I believe that, you know, we could see a scenario where the college football playoff gets bumped back and maybe you get more games in. But I think the big thing is, can you get these 9 games in by December 20th? And I think the Big Ten's confident with the new testing protocol that they've got in place that they'll be able to do that. But Alex, it doesn't leave any room, any margin for error.
Yeah, I was a little shocked by that. They extended it out that far, but it is going to make things, you know, every week count even more so. So, I don't know. The pessimistic part of me says that we're probably going to see some issues as far as having cases pop up, but I don't know if they're able to, you know, test constantly and be able to keep these kids from, you know, picking stuff up from other places. I think that most teams will probably be okay. But it's, you know, like you said, it's going to be slim margin for error.
That it is. And I will say, and Alex, we'll get a chance to talk to Noah about this, Micaiah as well. But let's be honest, you know, you've got a situation with the Big Ten and with sports in general. We've talked a little bit about the NBA, but we've spent much of the last 6 months talking about if sports will happen, how sports may happen. Alex, we're going to actually get to talk football. What's that going to be like?
Yeah, I don't know. I think we'll be totally rusty because we've talked a little bit about NBA, but other than that, we were, myself personally, it hasn't really been on my mind just because I didn't want to, you know, kind of get my hopes up and really think too much about the potential season if it wasn't going to happen. So now I kind of got to shift back into that gear and kind of remember what happened, seems like forever ago, which is just, you know, earlier this year as far as how the team played and the guys that are coming back.
Certainly. And, you know, I'm excited to be able to break this down. We haven't really talked, have we really talked roster at all over the past 6 months? Have we talked schedule? Of course, the schedule has changed. But, you know, our normal preseason predictions and shows, we dive into this pretty deep, and we haven't been able to do that. But I do like the fact that it's the 24th and that it gives us plenty of time to talk about it. And I mean, if you look at the protocol that they have in place for COVID-19, they've got this new antigen testing. That was a big reason. That sounded like the biggest reason as to why the Big Ten is coming back. Although I think PR, I don't think that can be understated. Of course, we had John Ogias on last week. We talked about the media disaster that the Big Ten had on its hands, and they didn't handle this correctly. Kevin Warren, I don't think, handled this as well as he should have. But I do think the testing has made a big difference. They've got this antigen testing, which is basically the equivalent of what the NBA, the NFL, has been using. They're able to test guys virtually every day, and they're not allowed into the football practice facility unless they're tested negative. So, you know, in a way, you've got sort of a bubble when you're inside that facility. Guys that are positive will not be allowed in. Of course, will not be allowed to play. Guys that test positive will also have to wait 21 days. I'm a little skeptical about that. I think the main reason why they're going above and beyond the CDC's recommendations is to be extra cautious as it relates to myocarditis, which there have been some studies that have shown that athletes could be at higher risk of having some issues as far as, you know, an increase in swelling in their heart, although it's so early to really know on this, you know, this kind of thing. But this allows time for the myocarditis testing, which they do have plenty of testing now to trace this out. They were able to allow themselves time to find this and help that athlete to recover. That way that athlete is not taking an unnecessary risk. So they're being extra cautious. I don't think you can blame them for that. But Alex, this makes a huge impact on play. A guy can't play for 21. That's almost half the season. So let's look at a team like Iowa. Of course, you could take Ohio State with Justin Fields as a perfect example. But you look at a team like Iowa. We don't know what Spencer Petras is going to be like for Iowa. We expect him to be a solid QB, a guy that you know, has learned from his predecessor, Nate Stanley. He's got the mechanics. We as far as we know, he's definitely got the size. He's got the body. We've heard he's got the arm strength. And so usually the quarterback is going to be the most indispensable player on the team. Imagine if Spencer Petras gets diagnosed with COVID. Imagine if he gets diagnosed with COVID right before week one. I mean, what is that going to be like, Alex? I mean, he's out. He is out. And you and I have talked about this, how Ferentz sometimes, and we haven't had a chance to really dive too deep into questions like this. This has been something that I wanted to talk about, but just because of the crazy year that we've had the racial thing at Iowa and the pandemic, we haven't really been able to talk about coaching and whatnot. But Ferentz likes to sometimes, when a guy gets hurt or a guy misses time, and I get the reasoning, he basically says, look, he got behind, he missed time, his backup filled in nicely. Now, we don't often see that with quarterbacks, but we really haven't seen a whole lot of quarterback injuries during the Ferentz era. Or at least that I can remember. Obviously, Ricky Stanzi, 2009, James Vandenberg filled in, but that was towards the end of the season, and Stanzi was out for the year. Now, Stanzi did get his job back 2010, but I mean, what happens if Petras gets injured right before week one, Alex? Or, excuse me, coronavirus week one. Or, of course, injury can always happen, but what happens if he gets diagnosed with COVID right before the first game?
Well, this is the first I've heard about having a 21-day sit-out period. I had just assumed this whole time that they were going to go by, because, you know, 6 months ago, the quarantine period was 14 days from the start of an infection, and then I think they narrowed it down to about 10 days, where they figured out that these guys are not contagious after 10 days. So 21 days, I hadn't heard about that. That definitely that definitely is going to throw a wrench in the works if you have, because you're talking could be 3 weeks, whereas 10 days could just be 1 week, you know, could be, or maybe two. So, yeah, that's a big deal. I hadn't heard about that.
Well, and that's not the only thing. Of course, you probably heard this. If you didn't, this was the other big announcement from the Big Ten Wednesday. A team that has more than a five. And again, I'd have to. There was a little bit of controversy as to what exactly they were trying to explain with this. But the Big Ten has said that if a team has a greater than 5% positivity rate within the roster, that team cannot play for 7 days. They're shut down for 7 days. Now, that's, I think, seven guys, or is it five guys, something like that? I mean, it's a roster. I can't remember how many guys in a roster. It's over 100. Although they may just be counting scholarship players. I don't know. But my point is, that's going to be interesting as well. Because, and the good news about this, Alex, is this is what we're what we're going to be able to see with this antigen testing. I mean, you look at the NFL. You know, Micaiah, and I'm allowed to say his name, Micaiah said this before we started the NFL season. He said there's going to be delays everywhere. He said there's going to be players missing time everywhere because of COVID. Alex, have you heard of one significant player in the NFL that's missing time because of COVID?
I haven't, but I don't know that I would have noticed if there had been one, because I just haven't been following it.
Well, the answer is no, because there haven't been positive tests. There have not been a significant number of positive tests. We had like, I don't know how many, over 1,000. I don't know how many players on rosters. Before all these cuts, there were like over 1,000. We had like one positive or one individual on the COVID reserve. I mean, in large part, the NFL is staying safe with the protocol in place. So, you know, I go back to, you know, college football. I get these kids are students. I get that they're going to be mixed in with the student population. But if you just go by the data so far, we've had college football now for what, 3-4 weeks, Alex? If you just go by college football so far, there have been postponements. There have been teams that have had to shut down, but largely it's been because of contact tracing. And this antigen testing is virtually going to get rid of contact tracing as it relates to the team. Guys are not going to be in the facility if they're positive. What's been happening, and it happened with Memphis, although Memphis, we've heard that they had a bus party after a win, which is just stupid. And you reap what you sow. But we heard this with Tennessee. We've heard this with, I believe it was Houston Baptist, TCU and SMU. That game got postponed. Most of these games that have been postponed have been because of contact tracing. Two or three, four guys maybe get it, and then that wipes out 30 people, 40 people. And teams have to be shut down. Not because there's 30, 40 positives, because 30 to 40 people were in contact, because this is football. And that's been the challenge all along. I've argued that I don't believe that I have not seen any evidence that says that football spreads the virus, and I stand by that. But because of contact tracing, you don't really have a choice. So, again, this antigen testing is going to change change things. You can have a guy test positive. Say, you know, Iowa's starting fullback, Turner Palisar, test positive. He won't be in the facility. Now, there are guys that live with other that's the other thing that we have to think about. There are a lot of players that live with other players, right? But, if you look across the country, largely it's been contact tracing. So, I mean, I don't know. If you're living with another guy and he gets COVID, does that wipe out all four players that live together? Maybe. And again, if you go over that 5% threshold, your team is out for 21 days. What is your prediction? I know we're just kind of grasping at straws here, Alex, but what are your thoughts on the antigen testing? And can Iowa and every Big Ten team get through this season without missing games?
I really don't know. I mean, especially with the 21-day thing, I think I said this on the last podcast, maybe not, but I get the feeling that this is just speculation that a lot of these players already have antibodies to COVID. So, for instance, we had, 11 Iowa players that already tested positive a few weeks ago just at that one time. And that's not counting the rest of the summer when a lot of those kids were surely partying and whatnot. So I have the feeling that there's going to be a lot of players that won't be able to get it, and that'll keep the numbers down to an extent. But I don't know if as far as that threshold, did you say it's 5% they have to get past to not play for a
Correct.
Week? Correct.
In my understanding, there's two different thresholds. One is involving the team roster, percentage of the team roster, and the other one is like population of the team. We'd have to look these things up. I know those are the two major ones, though. 5% of the roster number, and then, again, if a player is out, he's out 21 days, even if he tests negative in 5 days.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's definitely going to be interesting. Let's just say you could put that number at five players for a roster if you had five at once. I could see that happening, but I don't know. To me, it sounds like the more likely problem is going to be missing individual kids for 21 days. You know, that could be even worse than missing, you know, having the whole team. Well, probably not worse, it's bad in a different way, but depending on who it is that's sitting out for that long, that's a big deal. Like, you know, it's like in previous years when we've had major injuries and it totally affects the course of the season. And then, like we've talked about with Iowa, a lot of times those guys come back after a lengthy injury and they basically have their job taken by somebody else and they may not see the field again. So I think that will happen to an extent. Hopefully we don't get too many players that happens to, and hopefully they're not, you know, key integral pieces of the team. But yeah, I could see them keeping it below the 5% mark. I get the feeling that I'm not sure what individual teams are going to do as far as if they were to find out about reckless behavior as far as off the field, you know, parties and whatnot. I'm not sure, but you would think that a team like Iowa is probably going to have some pretty harsh punishments for players if they were to, you know, pick that up somewhere and somebody basically rats on them. So, I get the feeling that we probably won't see the whole team miss 7 days, but we probably will see some players miss the 21.
And let's be honest with this. Iowa and all the Big Ten schools know what it feels like to have their seasons taken away. We were under the impression a month ago that the season was done. And I know Memphis had according to reports, Memphis had a bus party, which is just stupid. I don't care if it's just the players or not. That's just stupid. I just have to think that Iowa players, Big Ten players, are going to do everything they can to not miss time, both for themselves and for their teammates. Now, a guy who's not playing, you know, that is going to be the challenge. A guy who's a second string or a third stringer, that's going to be a challenge because you don't want him going out and being reckless and then spreading it to two other guys that, that live in his dorm or that live in his house that are players that play. But I agree with you. I mean, I don't know why these starters. We know Tyler Goodson, Maurice Goodson, told the Des Moines Register this past week that Tyler Goodson was diagnosed with COVID, missed some time, and got a little behind physically as a result of it. But here's a guy, Alex, that, again, it doesn't completely eliminate contact tracing because there can be tracing outside of the facility. But, theoretically, that should tell us that Tyler Goodson, one of Iowa's best players, is not going to miss time. And I would love to see who got the. And of course, we're not going to know this because of HIPAA, but I would love to know who on this team has been diagnosed with COVID. We know the basketball team. I think that. Didn't we hear, Alex, that initially it was three players? I think Jordan Bohannon, he's got a new podcast out. I think he said on his podcast that like seven guys on the team have had it on the basketball team. So,
I didn't hear that.
I mean, that's over half the basketball team. Yeah, so, we don't know who those guys are, but similarly with the football team, wouldn't you like to know who's had this virus?
Well, that's what I'm saying is I have the feeling, just a random guess, I think that probably half the players have had it. That's just my uninformed opinion, but we already know that 11 of them at one point did. So if you extrapolate that out over the months, over the course of the summer, which is when most people have, most infections have happened, you got to think that it's significantly higher than 11. So I think it's the numbers probably maybe even higher than my guess.
So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I almost get giddy just talking about this. Does that make me a girl?
Makes you something. I don't know if it's a girl.
I'm just thinking about talking about football, and it's getting me excited.
Oh, just thinking.
I'm thinking about breaking down this. Yeah, I'm not even thinking about the football. I'm thinking about talking about the football. I'm thinking about talking about the quarterback position, the depth at wide receiver, the running back position. We haven't heard of any opt-outs, and Ferentz alluded this past week that there's a possibility that a couple players do opt out. But we know certain guys have voiced how excited they are to play, including Brandon Smith, Amir Smith-Marset, Tyrone Tracy. Those guys have all voiced how excited they are to play. Tyler Goodson's playing. We know that. I'm sure Spencer – I'd be shocked if Spencer Petras doesn't play. Of course, you think of the other star players on this team. We haven't heard anything about Sam Laporta, Chauncey Golston, Alaric Jackson. I mean, I think Alaric Jackson, he would be a guy that might opt to sit out. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. I hope nobody does. I hope none of the starters decide to sit. But they have a right to, and we respect that. If they are concerned for their health, that's understandable. And, we can't tell them how to live their lives or manage their health, but we actually get to talk about Spencer Petras, Alex. We actually get to talk about the new quarterback at Iowa. Do you realize Nate Stanley was a quarterback at Iowa for the last 3 years, and we haven't really spent any time talking about Spencer Petras? What's this going to be like, being able to break down the quarterback position?
It'll be kind of tough because I think myself, I've probably only seen him throw like three passes that I can remember. So a lot of it's going to be speculation, but that also opens up the realm of possibility. You don't really know what you're going to get totally. We have a little bit of an idea, but we really haven't seen too much from him yet. So the sky's the limit, I guess.
It was interesting. Tyler Kluver's podcast that he does, Washed Up Walk-Ons, which I don't listen to. But I did listen to an excerpt of a show here probably 2 months ago. And those guys were talking about Spencer Petras. And it was interesting. He apparently his little brother, I don't know if his little brother took a visit to Iowa or I don't know. I know he had a little brother. I remember him in high school. I don't know if that's the one we're talking about. I'm assuming it's different one because I would think he'd already be through. I don't know. Anyways, but he was talking about this kid that went to, I don't know if it was a workout in the spring or last fall or whatever. And apparently, and again, I'm paraphrasing this, so don't quote me on this. But what I gathered was, and again, it's just one person's opinion. Tyler Kluver's little brother basically said to him after watching the Iowa offense, he said, dude, Spencer Petras is going to be better than Nate Stanley. And he talked about his confidence in the huddle, his command of the huddle. And that's what I keep hearing. We've heard similar things from Ferentz. Maybe he hasn't gone that far. Of course, he's never going to compare Spencer to Nate in that way, but I keep hearing that Spencer is incredibly confident. All right. We know Kirk Ferentz named him the starter, I think, what, back in January, which he never does. He's talked about how he looks at him as a Big Ten quarterback. I mean, if Petras, we know he's a bigger guy, much like Stanley was. If Petras has a little bit more touch on his throws and a little bit more accuracy, how good can he be in relation to Nate Stanley?
Well, I mean, he'll definitely have that advantage of being able to see the field a little bit better. And as far as movement, you know, Stanley had strengths, especially literal strengths and figurative strengths, but literally was able to break tackles, which is not something you see just because somebody's that height. You know, for instance, you have a guy like Peyton Manning versus Ben Roethlisberger. They're basically the same size height wise, but one had the crazy ability to be able to break tackles and the other one never did. So height doesn't mean he's going to be as physically dominant as Stanley was. I don't think he will be, just because you don't see guys able to do what Stanley did in terms of breaking tackles very often, but there's definitely some advantages. We probably can infer from his height that he's going to be a more stationary pocket passer. It would be shocking to me if he's more of a mobile guy, but so we can make some assumptions from the little we've seen him play and just from his stats. But overall, yeah, there's definitely some similarities to Stanley, and might be a good thing as far as the players being able to adapt to a new quarterback. They've had a guy who's pretty much a pocket passer the last 3 years, and you know, receivers are able to count on that more. The offensive line is probably used to that a little bit more. I know that, you know, with mobile guys, a lot of times it can throw the offensive line guys into a bit of a disarray. So it's probably easier for them to plan for, I'd say. Whereas you have a guy like, you know, back in the day, Robert Griffin Jr., who, you know, he could come out of the pocket at any angle, and then you have guys scrambling to try and block for him. So they probably won't have to worry about that as much, assuming that Petras is not a mobile quarterback. But so it should be a better adjustment, I'd say, going from Stanley to Petras versus, say, somebody like Beathard, who was a little more mobile, to Stanley.
Let's compare Nate Stanley's high school stats with Spencer Petras' high school stats, because a friend of mine led me onto this number, or these different numbers, I should say, maybe a month ago, month and a half ago. And I thought it was very interesting because obviously it's not apples to apples, right? They played in different parts of the country in high school. Nate Stanley was from Wisconsin, I believe. If I'm not mistaken, Petras was California. But it was interesting just to compare the numbers, because when you think about Nate Stanley, one shortcoming that he seemed to have a hard time overcoming was that of accuracy. And Alex, from his his sophomore to junior year, and even from his junior to senior year, we kept talking about how he's got to get his accuracy numbers, his completion percentage numbers, over 60%. Did he ever do that?
As far as the numbers, I'm not sure, but he definitely did improve accuracy-wise, but he still had moments where, you know, he'd throw inexplicable pass, or he just would overthrow a guy, so he had a little bit of a lack of touch sometimes, and that still cropped up even his senior year, so he definitely improved on that, because it seemed like early on he was a little bit more of a loose cannon, and he did definitely improve, but no, he never got to the point where, because, you know, if he had been an extremely accurate passer, the guy would have been drafted a lot higher, because he already had an NFL body, and he wouldn't have been. Didn't he just get cut by the Vikings?
Yeah, he's on their practice squad.
Okay, so, yeah, I mean, he definitely never totally fulfilled his potential. Maybe he can do that at the next level. I hope he does, but, yeah, he never really ironed out all those issues.
And of course, my network's having issues now. Can you Google this real quick? Google Nate Stanley high school stats. It should take you to WISSports.net. But just Google Nate Stanley high school stats and see if you can give me his completion percentage throughout his high school career.
Okay.
And
was he from Menominee or Menominee Falls, Wisconsin?
Menominee, I believe.
Okay, because that's kind of out in the middle of nowhere. Menominee Falls is Milwaukee, but Menominee is over by towards St. Paul. Let's see here. Well, it's 2015 totals. It's only showing 1 year.
Okay, what were his 2015 totals?
2015 totals were 48.6% completion rate.
48.6?
Yes.
What the heck is that? 48.6? How could he have been below 50%?
His passer rating is, I believe that's what that is. It just says rate, 95.6. 15 touchdowns, okay. 6 receptions.
So that was
2015.
Okay, so let me give you Spencer Petras numbers. For his career, so that was, so for, you said 48.6 for his senior year?
Yeah, but 2015 would have been his senior year, because...
Right.
Yeah, he committed. Okay, yeah.
So Spencer Petras for his career, let's go to his senior year, actually. Let's go to Spencer Petras' senior year. For his completion percentage, actually, now I'm looking at 15-16. Let's go to 17-18. Would have been his senior year. Help of my network was running a little bit better, but okay, so 17-18, we're looking at 60.2% for Spencer Petras his senior year, compared to what for Nate Stanley?
48.6.
So what a difference there. Now again, I know these aren't apples to apples, but Spencer Petras did play it at Marin Catholic High School. Now you can say, well, he probably had better athletes surrounding him, blah, 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 blah. Well, that may be true, but he also had better defenders against him. So I just find that interesting.
What was his TD to interception ratio?
His senior year, listen to this number. If the completion percentage didn't boggle your mind, listen to this. Spencer Petras, his senior year, 50 touchdowns to 2 interceptions. Well,
you know, 15-6.
Wow.
But, you know, there's a lot to be said about, you know, high school varies so much as far as other players around you. And
I know, but we're talking California. We're not talking about Menominee.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, I know at MHS, Marshalltown High School, they had a couple guys that, you know, threw huge numbers, but they never went anywhere. So I don't know what their, like, completion percentage, that type of thing was. But, you know, I'm sure a lot of it comes down more to what scouts see versus actual numbers. But those are definitely pretty good numbers, especially the 50 touchdowns. So that was a pass-heavy team.
50 touchdowns, two interceptions. How many yards did Nate Stanley have his senior year in high school?
Total 1,626.
Holy goodness. That's total passing yards?
Yeah.
Did he play the whole season? Or was he hurt?
It says 12 games.
Yikes. Holy cow. All right, so Petrus played 13 games. Guess how many yards Petrus threw for?
I don't know. 15,000.
No. 4,157.
Hmm.
He averaged 320 passing yards a game.
I just found his other seasons. Looks like Stanley played in, sophomore year, played 9 games, and then his junior year only played 5 games, but his completion percentages were worse in those years.
Petrus is sitting, his junior year, Petrus was 56.4%. He had a 33-8 touchdown interception ratio with over 3,000 passing yards. His sophomore year, Petrus didn't play much, 55 passing yards. Just played in one game. Actually, played in 5 games, but must not have threw the football very much. So I don't know what capacity he was playing. But for career, so do you have career stats in? So what was Stanley's? So Stanley for his career in high school was below 50%. How does that even work? How do you get a Big Ten offer at below 50% completion percentage?
Well, it says it. Wisconsin was courting him heavily, I guess, and so he had at least 2. I don't know if he got an official offer, but let's see. Yeah, it says Wisconsin continues to recruit the standout signal caller. So
standout
after he committed to Iowa, verbal commitment.
Well, he's obviously was really good at baseball. He's a big guy, very athletic. So, I mean, I understand it from that perspective. But what was his, as far as his measurements in high school? How tall, how heavy was he?
6'5", 206.
206?
Yeah. He looks like a skinny kid in the picture. He doesn't look like Iowa needs him.
I say, Spencer Petrus in high school, 6'5", 225. So what does this all tell you, Alex?
Petrus is the next Peyton Manning. What are his rushing stats?
I'm guessing very low. Let's see here. I don't know that we have rushing stats.
For some reason on this one, it's only showing for his 2015 year. It's only showing 9 games, which he... It's showing 12 for his passing stats. Is that just because he didn't have a rush attempt in 3 games, or how does that work?
I have no idea. I know it says Petrus ran about 17 yards per game. He did have 16 rushing touchdowns. I'm guessing a lot of those were sneaks, but 159 carries for 533 yards throughout his career. But he finished total yards. Petrus had nearly 8,000 yards for his career. And as far as touchdowns to interceptions, 84 touchdowns to 10 picks. So I guess I'm just looking at it. I'm not saying he's going to be better than Nate Stanley. I'm not saying he's going to be the same as Nate Stanley. My thing is accuracy, and turnovers, and it appears, again, we're talking high school. I know it's totally different. He did not make a whole lot of mistakes in high school. So now, if we compare those to a guy like Ricky Stanzi, if you look at him in high school, let's look up his numbers, because, of course, he threw a lot of interceptions, especially that 2009 year when they were so good. But I am curious to compare his high school stats. I know that his successor, James Vandenberg, certainly had a prolific high school career, broke all kinds of records down, I believe, in Keokuk was where he played high school ball. Nate Stanley, or excuse me, Ricky Stanzi. High school honors. So he was the Ohio Division III Player of the Year. Threw for 2,400 yards and 21 touchdowns. Wow. Just 21 touchdowns for his career? No, as a senior. Excuse me. As a senior, 62% completion percentage. It doesn't say interceptions, but he had 62% completion percentage. I just feel like, you know, that Nate Stanley number, it's so low, and it wasn't that low at Iowa, but it was never that high either. And I guess what I'm saying on this is I would not be shocked if the numbers are any indication that Petras comes in here and has a better completion percentage than his predecessor, Nate Stanley. And, of course, we'll have time to break all of that down. He's not going to have, I'll say this, he's not going to have warm-up games like a typical new Iowa quarterback has against a Northern Illinois, against a Miami, Ohio, a Ball State, a, you know, Southeast Missouri State. He's going to have to jump into the fire quick. And that gets us into the next part of our discussion, and that is the schedule. We talked about how they're going to be starting the 24th. There are going to be, basically what the Big Ten is, they released the schedule on Saturday morning, which I found funny because they said just a few days, and then we heard, oh, it's going to be the following week, and then ended up being announced Friday night that it would be Saturday morning. Big Ten can't seem to communicate very well from a PR standpoint. But anyways, they announced all these games in order for each team, but they did say that they would announce Friday night games at a later date. So it is very possible that Iowa could have a Friday night game or two. I'm guessing they will not have a Friday night game besides the Nebraska game. I'm hearing that they're trying to get that Nebraska game to still be on Black Friday, which I think would be great if they could still get it to be on Black Friday. It is that weekend. So we'll wait and see who gets scheduled which Friday nights. But we do know the schedule for Iowa, and Alex will break down the schedule on a future podcast once we get the Crucos back on here, and we'll talk about the Iowa schedule. But what were your initial impressions when you saw this football schedule? You've got Purdue first on the 24th. You've got Michigan State, Penn State, or excuse me, I'm reading this backwards. You've got Iowa and Purdue on the 24th at Purdue. You've got Iowa, Northwestern, and Kinnick on the 31st of October. Iowa gets Michigan State on the schedule on the 7th of November. They go to Minnesota on the 14th, to Penn State on the 21st. They're back home against Nebraska Thanksgiving weekend. Illinois is on the road on the 5th, and then they get their biggest game of the season, no question about it, at home against Wisconsin December 12th. Before that final weekend, which is going to be the championship weekend, December 19th will be the Big Ten championship game. But according to the Big Ten, they are also going to have everybody else in the Big Ten play a game that day. Of course, the top two teams from each division will match off or match up against each other in the Big Ten championship game. But also the second place teams will match up against one another. The third place teams in each division will match up and so on and so forth as you go down all the way to the seventh place teams. I thought that 8+1 schedule was clever, Alex. It gives the Big Ten a little bit more exposure. There is a possibility. We don't expect this, but say Penn State ends up being undefeated besides the Ohio State game, but as a result, they miss out on the Big Ten championship game. Say they go 8-1 with a loss only to Ohio State, and they get to play against Iowa or against a Minnesota, you know, during championship week. So it's not part of the Big Ten championship game, but it is a 2-versus-2 game, and they end up at 8-1. Who's to say the playoff committee won't consider them? We don't know what's going to happen in all these other conferences. So that is going to be interesting. Your thoughts on the 8+1 schedule layout and what Iowa was handed as far as a draw?
Well, it feels like a little bit more balanced out schedule, I guess. It's kind of different because you don't have, you know, the big glaring lack of a game is the Iowa State game, which is weird to not think about, but as far as the Big Ten schedule, it's a little more spread out. I'm kind of glad that the Wisconsin game is a little bit later for some reason. It'll be interesting. I think it seems like you have a little bit easier games peppered in with tougher games. They're kind of all mixed together. So that could be a good thing. It probably will tell us where they're at a little bit earlier on than if you had more of a heavy schedule towards the end of the season versus the beginning. So overall, I don't mind that schedule.
Iowa has lost to Purdue 2 of the last 3 years, Alex. So Nate Stanley had a losing record against the Boilers. How hard is that going to be? I know there's no fans. That is a factor. But how freaking hard is it going to be for Iowa to go at Purdue week one? I mean, when you're used to playing a Miami, Ohio, a Ball State, and you're at Purdue out of the gate with a brand new quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be tough, but these other teams are in mostly the same boat as far as not having had played these tune-up games, essentially. So obviously not having a quarterback or having a new quarterback is a huge factor. But I was bringing back a lot of talent. So other than that position, I feel pretty good. I think every team is going to have, you know, that first week is probably going to be a bit hectic, and we're probably going to see some upsets early on. So it'll probably just depend on which team is able to get, you know, use these next, 5 weeks or so to really get into gear. And I have pretty good faith that Ferentz will do that.
If you Google search Iowa's schedule, there's no TV time set, and there is just one time set. And this can't be right, because I click on the Iowa website and it says TBA for to be announced, but it says Iowa Purdue at 7 a.m. 7 a.m. You going to be up for that game, Alex?
I'll wander down about halftime, maybe.
Good God. You probably would, too. You know, we've been waiting for football for, 9 months? Over 9 months? And you'd probably sleep past this game.
Oh, I fell asleep.
That's probably what you'd do, isn't it?
Well, we still haven't talked about how we're going to watch these games, so if we were doing it by what we had talked about, there probably wouldn't be a way for you to see it here at the house without being awake anyway.
What do you think the weather's, you know, we talked about that originally, I think, for October 10th. Now we're talking October 24th. Yeah. What's the weather going to be like October 24th?
Well, we've had, was it last year, the year before, November was basically December, and October, I think it was last year, October was really warm, and it just, the switch flipped into November, and it was just basically like winter. So we could have that again, who knows. With Iowa, it's totally bipolar, so we could have snow, or we could have, you know, 60, 70 degree days.
Yeah, so that should be interesting. Okay, so we'll get to compare. We'll get to obviously break down the schedule. We'll make our picks for the season, our preseason predictions in future shows. I do want to just mention, if you compare Iowa's schedule to the original schedule that Iowa was drawn, let me see if I can find it here. the original schedule. See if I can find it here. I don't know if anybody has the original schedule still. Yeah, I don't. Everybody I'm looking at here shows the updated schedule. How would a person even find the original schedule?
Why would a person want to?
Well, to compare. I mean, the big thing that stands out to me, Alex, was the fact that the Hawks were avoid Ohio State. Remember the original schedule? They were supposed to play at Penn State and at Ohio State, and that got dropped. They actually don't have to play at Ohio State. So everybody was complaining about how, well, Wisconsin got the easy draw again, and they did. Wisconsin's schedule, I mean, look at Wisconsin's schedule, Alex. Wisconsin plays, let me pull it up here. They don't get Ohio State. They don't get Penn State. So the two best teams in the conference, or at least the two teams we expect to be the best, they don't have to play. They get Illinois at Nebraska, home against Purdue. They do play at Michigan. That's going to be the toughest game, most likely. At Northwestern, home against Minnesota, home against Indiana, and at Iowa. That's a pretty cakey schedule, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, usually need the help.
Yeah. So, now, here's the good news about this. And I go back to this basically every year. If Iowa beats Wisconsin, they have an excellent chance of winning the division. Can we agree with that? I mean, Purdue is maybe going to be a factor if they're healthy, if Rondale Moore is able to opt back in, which, by the way, he opted out of here a couple weeks ago. We've heard rumors that he's going to be opting back in. Minnesota's a factor. Rashad Bateman, I don't know if you heard about this, the star wide receiver, he opted out. He's opting back in. Apparently hadn't hired an agent, so he's able to return. It's incredible what this updated schedule has done as far as bringing guys back. We're hearing that the two star players from Ohio State that opted out are now trying to come back. So, I don't know. I look at this and I say, it's going to be tough everywhere. So it's going to be tough for Wisconsin to beat Purdue. Because I don't think home field advantage is that big of a deal right now. So I'm telling you, the one game that everybody's overlooking on Wisconsin's schedule, and we'll talk about this on future episodes, is Indiana. Everybody's assuming Indiana. By the way, the two games that are, according to this, are scheduled on as far as time on Wisconsin's schedule. According to this, on November the 21st, they play Northwestern at 6 a.m., and then on December 5th, they play Indiana at 6 a.m. Your thoughts?
I like it.
I don't know where Google's getting this information, but
I'll still be up for the night before.
Yeah. But no, that Indiana game, that's one everybody's overlooking. Alex, Indiana won, I think, 9 games last year. This is not a typical Indiana Hoosiers team. They're not going to win the East, but I could see them beating Wisconsin. And you could also call that a bit of a trap game. Wisconsin plays at home against Minnesota on November 28th, and they get Indiana, and then at Iowa December 12th. I could see that Indiana game being a trap game. And if you're Iowa, you look at Iowa's schedule. They play, if you look at, assuming you can get past, again, this is a big assumption, you can get past Purdue, Northwestern, and Nebraska, and Illinois, those four. And again, I mean, I don't think anything's a given. But assuming you can do that, you get Michigan State at home. Well, I think Michigan State's going to be down. Minnesota is going to be a tough one. Penn State's going to be a tough one. Those two games are on the road. So those are tough games, no question about it. Iowa can lose two of those games. They can lose two games prior to the Wisconsin game, Alex. They can lose two games. You can lose at Minnesota, at Penn State, or you can lose at Penn State and at Purdue, or you can lose at Minnesota and home against Michigan State. You can lose two of those games as long as Wisconsin drops one other game. I mean, if Wisconsin loses to Michigan, which they very well could, if Wisconsin were to drop one against Indiana, which they very well could, as long as Iowa beats, it's what people don't understand. This is a shortened schedule, and it's a crazy year. Everybody's talking about strength of schedule. I don't know how much it matters. I don't think anybody – I don't see Wisconsin just coming into the schedule and steamrolling everybody. I don't. I know they don't have Jonathan Taylor, but everybody's still picking him in the top 20. That may be the case, but I don't see them just blitzing through the schedule and being undefeated at Iowa. I don't foresee a scenario where Wisconsin is 7-0 and Iowa is 5-2 or 4-3. I'm not saying it can't happen. I mean, they very well could. I just don't foresee that happening. So my point is, everybody's talking about how bad the schedule ended up for Iowa. If they have one loss and Wisconsin has two losses, what Iowa has to do is win that last game, and they've won the West. They won the West. They can end up with two losses, tie Wisconsin, have the tiebreaker with the head-to-head. So I'm excited about this new schedule because the original schedule Iowa had would have been at Penn State and at Ohio State. And trying to find the schedule that they released October 5th. What was the day that, when was the derecho?
Oh, I don't remember the date. Not sure. That was when they announced the cancellation.
Yeah, let me see here.
I figured that would jog your memory more than the actual storm.
Well, that's why I was thinking about the storm. 10-game Big Ten schedule announced.
In 10 years, you'll remember the cancellation. You won't remember the storm.
Well, that probably is true. Okay, here we go. Big Ten announces schedule.
While you're looking, don't you think it would be strange in the next few years or even 5-10 years down the road if we were to be looking back, if we didn't have a season at all and you just have an empty slot in the stats that you're looking at? You know, you have 16, 17.
It's going to be weird anyways because it's such a short season. You know, I always think of seasons being a 12-game schedule.
Right. That'll be noticeable if you look closely, but having the whole thing gone would have been really strange.
And I'm not saying this is just an article from USA Today. How do you find stuff like this? I wish we could compare the original schedule with the 10-game schedule that was announced on August 5th. It's amazing. I just can't believe the whirlwind the Big Ten has been through. We have, as fans, have been through over the past, a month and a half? We go from thinking we're going to get a full season to 10-game season. Now it's an 8+1. Somebody give me a schedule. Somebody give me a schedule from the 5th. Here's a Wisconsin schedule. I love how it's so hard to find. You know, it's ridiculous. It is literally ridiculous. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes.
That a person can't find.
You know, here's a thought. This is totally Homer type thinking, but what if, because we talked about when Brian Ferentz took over offensive coordinator, as offensive coordinator, how he showed flashes of being more of a high octane offense through the air, but we didn't see that consistently implemented. Maybe that was partially due to Stanley's lack of reliability, I guess. And that's not
Here we go.
But maybe
they're going to start talking about how they're going to start airing it out.
Maybe they'll start airing it out and implement that high octane offense that we were all promised.
High octane.
Yes.
They do have the personnel for it this year. I mean, we don't know about Petrus necessarily, but Tracy Reganey, Brandon Smith, Amir Smith-Marset, Oliver Martin transferred to Nebraska. We haven't really talked about that. But they do have the personnel, Sam Laporta at tight end. I agree. If they're going to go pass heavy, especially, this is my other thing, especially if Ferentz is concerned with these guys from a physical standpoint. I mean, obviously we saw last year Iowa lose They lost at least two games, Alex. Would you agree with this? Iowa lost at least two games last year solely because of their interior line play on the offensive side. Their guards couldn't block jack squat. And they lost the Michigan game, they lost the Penn State game because of their interior guard play. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, especially Penn State game. I just remember it being over and over and over and the same guy most of the time.
There was a Michigan game too. Those games are the same. Those were the same games back to back. All right. And my point is, let's hope without a spring practice, this is my fear. They had no spring practice. They did get a lot of conditioning in, but they have a shortened tune-up to the first game. Let's hope that this team can improve the interior line play. But if they're able to do that and give Petras time to throw the ball, this may be the year, Alex, where you air it out. Tyler Goodson is great at catching the ball out of the backfield. You've got four tremendous wide receivers, two of which are seniors. You've got a flourishing tight end, one that is really improving in Sam Laporta. You've got a senior in Sean Beyer, who I know you're going to laugh at this. Everybody was comparing him to Noah Fant 2 years ago, and he's had a lot of injuries that have held him back. He had the squabble with Wisconsin 2018 where he ran into the football and you could argue partially costed Iowa that game. Special teams gaffes cost Iowa that game. This is the year, to me, where, you know, if you're concerned about being able to be as fine-tuned in the running game without a lot of time with blocking and whatnot, with run blocking, you've got two really good tackles in Coy Kronk and Alaric Jackson. They're going to be able to protect Petras on the outside. If you can, you know, Tyler Linderbaum is tremendous at center. They're going to be able to run the football, but to me, I agree with you. They need to be able to throw the football more than ever this year. Boy, it might be the year to do it. And they might have the perfect personnel and situation to do it.
Yeah, I mean, we already know they do as far as wide receiver positions. They are more stacked this year than ever. That's or at least in my lifetime. So I think Laporta shows a lot of is it Laporta or Laporte?
Laporta.
I was right. He shows a lot of promise. I think he shows really good hands, which reminds me a bit of Hawkinson. We hadn't seen a lot of consistent tight end play last year. I think I would predict that he'd be the guy to emerge if there were to be a guy emerge at that position. Like you said, Goodson's out of the backfield. Plus, he's good as a runner, which of course opens up the passing game. So this team has more skill position talent than any team I've seen. So the big major middle puzzle piece is the quarterback, and we just don't know yet. So that'll be the.
Well, I still think I am more concerned about guard play than quarterback play personally. And you can call me crazy for that. I'm not concerned about. I've seen Ferentz quarterbacks for the most part be successful year one. We've only heard good things about Petras, but the guard play has been bad, Alex. It has been bad. And I just don't know. They return everybody with the Paulson twins, who, no offense to the Paulsons, I'm not real sad they're gone. I'm sure they were great leaders in this football team, but they couldn't block. They could not block. There's a reason, no offense, there's a reason why those guys are not on an NFL roster, why they're not on a practice squad. They're Iowa linemen, and yet they're not even on practice squads. Did you hear anything about them even getting workouts? Did you hear anything about them getting workouts?
No, but I didn't follow it that closely.
All I'm saying is they do return Justin Britt. He'll be back. Kyler Schott's back. Cole Banwart will have one more year. We hope he is healthy. They've got personnel. It's just, have these guys improved enough? And I've even, I think, recommended on past podcasts, Alex, maybe you slide Coy Kronk over to guard. I mean, would you be against that? I mean, you hear you got a fourth-year guy from Indiana who's projected to get drafted, an all-Big Ten guy. He's a big boy. Send him over. if you're not confident with the interior of your line, let Kallenberger, who I think is a natural tackle, slide over to right tackle and put that big boy in there in the interior line and let him do some dirty work.
Well, hopefully they don't have to resort to that unless, you know, you...
Why is that resorting to that? Why is that resorting to anything?
If you have players that have kind of settled into their positions, you know, normally you're not going to want to, you know, if he's playing really well at right tackle, you're not going to want to shuffle him around unless you have a problem, and which hopefully doesn't pop up.
Well, I think Wirfs and Larrick Jackson were clearly tackles, and maybe Kronk is as well. I've not watched enough tape of him. He's clearly going to be a starter. I just, like I said, he's a big, big, big boy. And I think if you slide him into guard and you let him, you know, go to work inside, that's half your problem right there. And I think Kallenberger can do okay at tackle. They really haven't had a whole lot of issues at tackle, Alex. If you think about it, over recent years, they've pretty much been solid at tackle almost every year. Minus like 2012 when Brandon Scherff and Andrew Dinal both got hurt in the Penn State game. Other than that year, I mean, they've been pretty darn solid at tackle, from Tristan Wirfs to Alaric Jackson to Brandon Scherff to Andrew Dinal, you know, and so on and so forth. Riley Reif, Brian Bulaga, they're going to be okay. And a lot of those guys end up moving to guard anyways in the NFL. But my point is, I just think that I would be very surprised if these guys are going to – I'd be pleasantly surprised if those guys are able to just be – you know, the Iowa line that we grew accustomed to seeing. And I think we can both agree, like 2016, when Iowa was voted the best offensive line in the country, remember that? And it was like, why were they voted the best offensive line in the country? We watched every game and they were not the best offensive line in the country. You remember that year? They didn't run the ball well. They didn't protect the quarterback. I would be pleasantly surprised if they're able to make that jump. If they're able to make that jump, Alex, and Petras is as good as we think he might be, maybe I'm just living in the moment, and I've probably said this in past years, but what's making this offense, what is holding, if that is the case, what is holding this offense from being, what's holding it back from being absolutely prolific?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the offensive line is kind of the foundation for all of offense, so that's where a lot of it comes from, and the quarterback position is a bit of a question mark, but man, if those two things, even if the offensive line is just an average Iowa offensive line and the quarterback is an average Iowa quarterback, I think it's still a very good looking offense. And I think there's definitely a chance with Petras that he's better than that, better than average. So did you happen, this is a little bit off topic, but you were talking about the line. Did you happen to catch Tristan Wirfs' combine performance?
I didn't watch it. I think I did watch it, actually, the 40-yard dash.
Yeah, and the vertical.
Yeah,
but
he's a freak.
The 40 was like, what was it, 4.8 or something? He's like 300 pounds.
He is absolutely ridiculous. And I almost, you know, kind of like Brandon Scherff, I think Wirfs has a chance to be the second best lineman ever to play under Ferentz at Iowa. Is that going too far? I mean, Robert Gallery was great, but if you combine NFL and college, Riley Reif's got to be there, Brian Bulaga's got to be there, but I think Brandon Scherff, do you think Brandon Scherff is probably the best lineman to play at Iowa under Ferentz?
Hmm.
I mean, Marshall Yanda has had he had a storied career with Baltimore, I get that. But I mean, as far as just dominating, you know, and Scherff's a Pro Bowler. I could see Wirfs becoming that. He's just ridiculous. I almost feel like Iowa underutilized him. But how do you utilize a guy like that any more than, I don't know, running his side more?
Move the left guard when that guy kept coming through.
Well, that's the thing. That's why I said, when you talked about, well, they just need to be average. For them to be average on the line, they got to be a lot better than they were last year. And that's my thing. They had Wirfs and Alaric Jackson both. Now, Jackson was battled a few injuries last year, which, of course, that could happen again this year. We don't know, or he could get COVID. But the interior has to be a lot better than it was for them to be average. Like, they lost that Penn. I know I said this before. I'll say it again. They lost against Penn State. They lost against Michigan because of the interior of the line.
I definitely agree on Penn State. I don't remember the Michigan game as much as it relates to.
How do you not remember the Michigan game? That was the one where he shoveled it with his, or he threw with his left hand to Goodson in the very last play, and it was 10-3. And you don't remember that game?
I don't have that marked in my, I remember the game.
I think that was the game where Micaiah ate like five banana, what are they called? What are those called?
I don't think I bought those. Somebody else bought them.
I think I bought them.
I don't remember.
But what are those called? Are they Little Debbie makes them, or are they Hostess?
I have no idea. Weren't they kind of like a Twinkie type banana flavored thing?
Banana twins.
Oh yeah, banana twins. So you get two in each one, right?
Yeah, I think he had at least four. So two packages totally, got two in each one, I believe.
That's light work for me. Yeah, that's an thing. If we were to, because I guess they're on diets or something, they might not be able to be as free with their sugar consumption this year.
Oh. Well, yeah, banana twins. And remember the Raisin Cream Pies? Are they Raisin Cream Pies? Is that what they're called?
I think so. Yeah, nobody wanted those. I still got some of those.
Really? From last year?
Yeah. I put them in a big jar. Didn't we get some, I don't know if it was cheese puffs, or we had some big jar of stuff, and I just shoved all those cookies and stuff into that jar. They're still in there. I sent you that moon pie.
But those, I didn't eat that thing. But those Raisin Cream Pies, those were nasty looking, weren't they? If anybody here is familiar with Little Debbie's Raisin Cream Pies, I mean, what the heck? I mean, they don't even look good. They don't even look good. Okay, back to the Big Ten schedule. So the original schedule that was the second schedule that was released back on August 5th. So the game that got taken away on the updated schedule Saturday was the Maryland game. So Iowa doesn't get the crossover against Maryland. Okay, whatever. They were not on the original schedule. They still were scheduled to go at Purdue, at Minnesota, home against Nebraska, home against Northwestern, at Illinois. Those were all the same. They had a bye in week 7 at Penn State. Okay, Michigan State. Well, I didn't know about Michigan State. So they were scheduled. Michigan State was scheduled to come to Iowa. Iowa had another bye. Wisconsin came. Yeah, and then the last game was at Ohio State. I'm not complaining about this update, Alex, because the two games that were taken away were Maryland and at Ohio State. I mean, if you compare it to the schedule that was on the 10th, they don't have to play Maryland and Ohio State. So it goes from a 10-game schedule to an 8-game plus 1 schedule. They may end up playing Maryland. I hope not, because that means Iowa's probably going to be the bottom tier of the West. But they could end up playing Ohio State, certainly. If you look at Wisconsin's updated schedule, yeah, I get people are complaining about it. But again, I go back to this. We kept saying in the original schedule and in the August 5th updated schedule how bad it was going to be having to play at Penn State and at Ohio State. And they don't have to play Ohio State at all. Why aren't Iowa fans more excited about the schedule?
Well, I think it just became more of a mediocre schedule, whereas before it would have been really tough with Ohio State. So maybe they're just relieved that it's not as bad, but it's not still not a cushy schedule.
Well, according to Urban Meyer, he said this on Fox on Saturday morning, of the three teams that he considers the front runners for a West title, and those are Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, the toughest schedule out of those three is Iowa, followed by Minnesota, followed by Wisconsin. So according to Urban Meyer, Iowa, and I would agree with him, Iowa still has the toughest schedule of those three teams. So let's just be happy they didn't have to play Ohio State as well. Because I don't – I mean, how do you do that? How do you play at Penn State, at Ohio State, at Minnesota, and home against Wisconsin all in the same year? Now, Nebraska, have you seen Nebraska's schedule? I almost wonder if the Big Ten threw them a bone – well, didn't throw them a bone – took their bone away because of how much they were pushing for this season and the eight players that sued them. Listen to this schedule. At Ohio State, home against home against Wisconsin, at Northwestern, home Penn State, home Illinois, at Iowa, at Purdue, home Minnesota. Ohio State's ranked, Wisconsin's ranked, Penn State's ranked, Iowa was ranked. Minnesota, that's five top 25 teams in eight games, Alex.
Yeah, they're going like 3-5, 2-6.
So, but Lord, it's going to be fun. I'm just happy it's here. We're going to break down the schedule. We're going to break down the roster. It's going to be fun to do.